Interesting Money Sense program coming your way this weekend on the topic of leveraging your own strengths to improve your financial life. Money Sense gets going after this break.
Welcome to our Money Sense program, the show where we challenge conventional thinking about money and financial strategies. I'm your host, Brent Laux. Joining me this weekend is Kevin Hegedus, founder of PWM Financial Services, Inc. Kevin, of course, a registered portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners. Kevin, always a pleasure. Thanks for being here on the program.
It's my pleasure, Brent. And as usual, I'm really excited to dive into some thought-provoking topics around personal finance and wealth building today. And for those of you that have tuned in throughout the year, you've probably heard me talk about my thoughts around behavioral finance and financial planning regarding the concepts presented by someone by the name of Dr. Daniel Crosby and his book entitled The Solo Wealth. And you know, Brent, just before the show, I was talking about a conference I was at. I actually had a chance to meet with Dr. Crosby down there in California last week, spent some time with him. Super happy to announce that he's going to be a guest on our show either later this year or early in the new year. So I'm really pumped about that as well. Yeah, so I'm going to continue with that theme today. So we're going to talk about how to leverage your strengths to improve your financial life.
Well, let's start off then with a bit of a counterintuitive idea, Kevin. Albert Einstein struggled early in life, yet those same struggles helped shape his genius. So what can investors learn from that when it comes to focusing on strengths?
You're so right. You know, Einstein is a great reminder that what looks like weakness can become really a superpower when you work with it instead of against it. And I guess in money terms, most people attack what they dislike. So if they hate budgeting, they try to out-discipline it. But a better plan is to use what already comes naturally. So if you're, let's say, detail-oriented, try and channel that into a simple spending plan and reviewing of your statements maybe once a week. If you love people, meet with an advisor that you trust or even join a learning group and make money decisions with accountability. And if you're curious, set aside an hour every week to learn, read some books on finance. This is going to help you improve these new strengths. And by doing that, it's going to really help you stick with your plan.
So how would you suggest then that one begins to identify their strengths in a financial context?
I think the initial step is to sit down and brainstorm a comprehensive list of all your strengths, your talents, and even your blessings. It's really crucial to do this without filtering or judging any unique qualities. And once you have that list, then you want to identify the area in your financial life that requires improvement or requires growth. And then finally, Brent, explore how each of your identified strengths can be channeled into either a way to move you closer to that desired financial goal, or maybe better align you with your habits or your true values. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about values today as well.
Okay. What if your spouse has different strengths than you do when it comes to finances?
Well, in most cases they do. And this is where we want to divide and conquer, right? So let's say we've got one person that can be the CFO of cash flow, and then the other may be the CIO of those big picture goals or ideas. But you want to, I guess, agree on a few things here. So things like your savings rate, how much you want set aside in an emergency fund, and a spending threshold where maybe you both check in once a week or even once a month. And then let each person run with what they're good at. Let me try and explain this in another way. So many traditional financial approaches tend to highlight deficiencies or areas where individuals kind of fall short. But a more effective strategy really involves identifying and then leveraging your strengths and your talents and those blessings that I talked about before to try and improve your financial life. And, you know, Brent, the beauty of this approach really lies in discovering how these strengths can naturally benefit your money life with minimal effort or pain. So it's easier on you, and potentially even adding maybe an element of enjoyment to this entire process of saving and investing and planning for a future.
A good teamwork, I guess. We're on the topic of how to leverage your strengths to improve your financial life with Kevin Hegedus. Okay, can you give us a quick starter action then on this topic for this week?
What I would say is, you know, pick one strength, so something that you're good at, and then attach a 5-minute habit to it. So for example, if you're a natural planner, set aside maybe 5 minutes on a Sunday and review your plan for the week. So what's going to be happening this next week? Where are you going to be spending some money? What kind of social events that you got going on, and so on. If you're a social person, book a call with an advisor. someone that you trust. You know, those small actions become wins, and because they're easily repeatable, you can just keep doing them over and over again. So it's kind of like, what do they say? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right?
You know, that's a fascinating perspective. You've also discussed the idea that failure can be the best teacher. How does this apply then to personal finance, especially when people often try to avoid financial mistakes at all costs?
In this way, again, it can be counterintuitive, but failure often provides some really invaluable lessons that success can't. And there's research that indicates that people learn more from failure than they do from its success. And the key thing here is to analyze what went wrong and then why it went wrong, rather than simply ignoring that feedback. So when we embrace failure as a learning opportunity, we need to ask ourselves a few, I guess, critical questions. So the first thing we want to do is say, you know, what did I learn from this experience, and has it improved my relationship with money? Secondly, what do I know or understand about my own strengths for having lived through this? Thirdly, how are my priorities better aligned with the result of the hardship I just went through? And then finally, are there ways in which I can live with greater urgency today as a consequence of what happened? So if you have this, I guess, reflective process, it can really transform those setbacks that we feel into growth opportunities for you.
So how do I know then if I'm experiencing a normal setback or if I'm really stuck in a broken strategy?
Yeah, it's a good question, Brent. And, you know, there's always going to be setbacks. There's always going to be corrections in the market, things that we can't control or things that we can't change. So again, I'd sit down and I'd ask myself a couple of different questions. So first of all, has my time horizon changed? Has the original goal that I set out for myself, has that changed? Has my risk budget been breached? And if your time horizon is still intact and the goal still stands, we got to remember that volatility is normal. If on the other hand, your goals have changed or the correction or whatever we've gone through has dramatically changed some of your goals or affected your goals, like retirement as an example, then you need to make an adjustment to your plan. And to give you an example, I use a software program that runs 1,000 different what-if scenarios. So what if the market crashes right before you retire? What if inflation is higher? What if you spend more than you anticipated? And it's going to come up with a score, and that score is going to measure the probability of your success. And we make sure that that probability and that score is always intact. So we're always monitoring this. And what this does is it really gives our clients security. It gives them peace of mind. And because of that, they're able to stick with that long-term plan.
Well, speaking of clients, have you got an example on this matter you can tell us about without mentioning the client's name?
For sure I do. You know, we met with someone heading into retirement a little while ago, and they had a very high concentration in one stock. So it was a company that they worked for, and they had a lot of their retirement assets in there. So together we sat down, we built a plan, we set guidelines, and we slowly diversified, and we used a rules-based plan to reduce that concentration risk. And this allowed us to make proper adjustments, also consider the tax consequences of reducing our exposure to that one stock, and then act appropriately. And this really is what calms the nerves when the markets start to wobble. And it gave this particular client a lot of peace of mind.
That's what we want, peace of mind. So is there any one tool, Kevin, that our listeners can use after they make a financial mistake?
Well, I call this the one-page postmortem. So lists, you know, I guess make a list of what happened, what was in your control, and what would you do differently next time? Because remember, things tend to repeat themselves. And then I keep it in the same folder as I keep my statement. So it's always going to be close to your portfolio. And it's also going to be a good reminder because it's there all the time for you.
We're having a great discussion with Kevin Hegedus on our Money Sense program here, how to leverage your own strengths to improve your financial life. I really like the tone of this program, and it's some good usable information. We'll take a quick break and be back in just a moment here. You're listening to Money Sense. Welcome back. Our Money Sense, we've got Kevin Hegedus here, PWM Financial Services, and we're on the topic of how to leverage your own strengths to improve your financial life. And I love these little nuggets that you've been sharing with us here, Kevin. And I've heard the idea, you know, that saying that your life will be as rich as your friends. Can you explain the connection between social circles and our financial well-being?
This concept really highlights the profound influence of our social environment, on our financial habits and our look. You know, our friends and people that we surround ourselves with often shape our perspectives on money, our spending habits, and even our aspirations. So if our social circle prioritizes, let's say, consumption or material possessions, you might find yourself unconsciously adopting some of those similar behaviors. But conversely, if you got friends that value saving and investing and financial prudence, you're more likely to emulate those positive habits. So it's about the subtle, often unconscious ways our peers influence our financial decisions and our overall financial richness, which even extends beyond money and monetary value, right? It includes things like our own personal well-being and really our contentment in life.
So what do you suggest then if my current circle of friends spend in a way that clashes with these goals I've got?
Right. You got to get rid of those friends. No, I'm kidding. You know, set some friendly boundaries, you know, suggest activities that fit your plan. So if you got friends that like to go out and go out for expensive meals, maybe say, hey, you know, I'm going to host at my place this weekend and we're going to do potluck. Everyone brings something over. Maybe even use separate bank accounts, even between spouses. If one spends more than the other, maybe you have different bank accounts for different types of expenses. But you know what I find, Brent, most people are pretty darn supportive. So if you let them know what your goals are and your aspirations, if you say, hey, you know what, we're saving for a vacation down the road, or you know what, I'm saving up because I want to buy my kid a car. Most people will respect that, right? And they'll be more than happy to bring that potluck over to your house and just spend time with you and your family.
So I'm assuming our digital feed, our social media is going to count as part of that circle you refer to?
This is a big one. You know, so here we're all on Facebook and all these different apps and stuff, right? Unfollow the hype. Anything that stirs up greed and fear, get rid of that stuff. Get rid of the influencers on your phones. Follow the educators. People that talk about planning and risk and patience, replace all that noise. And just remember what you pay attention to will reflect and influence how you manage your money and what you hold in your portfolio as well.
And of course, people say they value health, family, and learning, but I guess it's quite often their spending tells a bit of a different story. So how do you line up your words with your dollars?
It does. And you know, your budget is really a tangible representation of your priorities, right? It reveals where your money is actually going, not just where you think it's going. And if you claim to value things like financial independence, but your budget shows that you're excessively spending on discretionary items, there's a disconnect there. And conversely, if you prioritize things like education or charitable giving, your budget is going to reflect that as well and reflect those values through where you allocate those funds. So really, it's going to be a clear, undeniable snapshot of what truly matters to you. And it's going to be evidenced by your financial choices.
Okay, so what do you have advice for those people that say, nah, I just can't do budgeting, I don't like it?
Change the word. Don't call it a budget, let's call it a spending plan. And keep it to four different buckets. Okay, so we got our fixed needs. Bucket number two is our goal. Bucket number three is fun. And then maybe the last one is giving. And then automate the first three so that fun money isn't, you don't feel guilty about it. And when people give their dollars a job, what you'll find is that their stress level drops and they enjoy saving even more.
Okay. What can you tell us for couples who get a little uptight, get tense when they have to talk about family money?
Yeah. So I call this the weekly money huddle. So take 15 minutes, same time every week, put your phones away, look at last week, what happened, look at the week ahead, and then celebrate those small wins, right? Set some spending thresholds where both of you check in before making any big purchases so you don't have the husband going out and buying $1,500 set of golf clubs, those type of things, right? And then one practical move I would recommend to try would be to create a 10-minute value sweep. So find two expenses that don't match your values and then cancel them or downsize them and then add one that does match your values. And you know what, Brent? You're probably going to feel better right away by doing that small exercise.
Another concept I want to ask you about, Kevin, was delayed gratification being the ultimate life hack. Why do you see delayed gratification being so crucial for our financial success?
I think it's really a fundamental pillar of financial success, and it can lead to a better life overall. So it's, again, it's the ability to resist immediate temptations for a greater, more valuable reward in the future. And research has actually shown a strong correlation between delayed gratification and financial well-being. So for instance, studies have found that for adults who forgo unhealthy foods, they're better with their money. And when individuals consciously choose healthier options in their daily lives, they tend to make better choices when it comes to financial decisions. So what this suggests, Brent, is this is a transferable skill. So if you can delay gratification in one area of your life, you can actually apply that discipline to another area like finances.
So I guess it's really about building that muscle of self-control in personal finance. Waiting can feel hard. Isn't that why they gave us credit cards? So we don't have to wait. So how do we build up that self-control muscle?
So I guess here, start small and try to make it visible. You know, create a progress bar for your emergency fund as an example on your fridge. And then name those different savings accounts. So maybe one is future home. Maybe one is the European vacation in 2027 or your freedom fund. But when savings is tied to a picture, it feels like you're building something rather than denying yourself from something. If that makes sense.
So can you give us some advice? How do we make that waiting feel good and not like punishment?
What I would try to do here is I would pair the habit with a reward. So if you increase your savings rate this month, treat yourself to maybe a simple experience, like maybe you have a special family dinner at home or even a family movie night, and then celebrate the progress. I would track how often this is happening. And if you see a pattern or a streak being maintained, it shows that you're the kind of person that can follow through with things.
This is such a good refresher for people of all age. We're talking about leveraging your own strengths to improve your financial life with Kevin Hegedus. So as we head towards the back end of our program, any final thoughts on this topic, Kevin?
I want to talk a little bit about a lady. Her name is Bonnie Ware, and she is a palliative care nurse who's worked her life with folks in their final days. And she wrote a great book, and it's called The Top 5 Regrets of Dying. So I just want to list them off for our listeners today. So the number one regret was, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. Number two, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Number three is, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. Number four is, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. So true. I've got buddies that I went to school with that I haven't talked to in years. And the last one is, I wish I let myself be happier. So, you know, again, having a proper plan in place is really the key in all this. And, you know, let's all remember that money is something that we trade our life energy for. It lets us gain control over things like time, but it's also meant to create memories for ourselves and our families.
Excellent insights, Kevin. That's about all the time we've got on our Money Sense. How can our listeners, our viewers find out more?
So give us a call, 975-9500. Go to pwmprivatewealth.com. Just want to also let people know that we're going to be having our free Life After Harvest seminars this fall. Tim Hammond, he's a broker with Hammond Realty. Andrew Rodick, my business partner, myself as well. We're going to be talking about farmland values, trends, risks, incorporation, capital gains, tax considerations, the importance of having a clear, well-defined financial plan, and how to live a wealthy, fulfilling life. So we're going to be in Unity, Rosetown, Melford, and Saskatoon, November 5th, 7th, and 8th. Give our office a call, book a seat. It's going to be a great presentation.
Always are. Looking forward to them. Kevin Hegedus, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Brent. Always my pleasure.
This is Money Sense. Financial planning services are offered through PWM Private Wealth Council. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. PWM Private Wealth Council is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. You've been listening to Money Sense.